much, Daniel. We'll start with me, and then I'll hand over to Adam. As we saw in that video, and as I'm sure you'll be aware, even if you flick on the news, there's real injustice in our world, isn't there? There's real darkness, the reality of modern slavery, the aches we feel all around us as the world is not how it should be. But we also saw that there's incredible light breaking through into the darkness. And today we want to talk a little bit about how God has always been passionate about justice. His ways are completely miraculous. His story of freedom is woven throughout the entirety of Scripture. He brings breakthrough into the most impossible of situations, and he shines the most beautiful light into the darkness. And today, I believe he gives us an invitation to join him being people of justice in Inverness and beyond, a church who lets this injustice come in close, believing and fighting for freedom, but not out of a striving and a desperation that it's all on our shoulders, but rather out of a partnership and the overflow of our own relationships with God. So what is the problem? I want to start by telling you a story. If we go back one slide, actually, that'd be great. Thanks so much. This here is Castle Elmina. Has anyone in the room been to Castle Elmina in Ghana? No one here. Basically, this is a whitewashed building that stands on the coast of Ghana, and it was built in 1482 by the Portuguese for gold trading. Unfortunately, then there was a realization that there was more profit in trading people, and it became captured by the Dutch and the British, and it became a large part of the transatlantic slave trade. So people from across Africa would be brought to this castle, and they would be crammed into these spaces that could barely fit 200 people, about 1,000 in these spaces, cramped, filthy, disease-ridden, subjected to all sorts of humiliation for up to 3 months before they were then shipped out to America and the Caribbean to work as slaves. And at the center of this castle, the focal point was a church. This is it here. And this church existed so that life could carry on as normal for the governor of the castle, for the officers, for families and missionaries. And despite their mission to share Jesus with the locals, these doors remained shut to those trapped just meters away. And during Sunday services, they would sometimes be told to sing louder so as to mask the cries of the people just beneath them. They sang over cries of freedom from mothers, fathers, children. And when I heard this castle in Ghana, it jarred me not just because of the story, because it felt like a stark reminder that it is possible to spend a lot of time around Christians, even in church, whilst missing what God says is good. In the Old Testament, the prophet Micah says this. He says, "He has shown you what is good." This should immediately awaken us because it's God telling us what he likes. He has shown you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. God desires his people to be people who act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with him. At IJM, we're no stranger to this broken and fallen world. Day in and day out, we come face to face with darkness. And I want to tell you this morning a bit about this boy, Godwin. I was sharing earlier with Daniel and Alan that Godwin is his real name. We can rarely tell stories with people's real names. We use pseudonyms and actors. But Godwin recently turned 18, and he said he wants the world to know his real name and his real face. So this is really Godwin. And Godwin was a bright A-star student who loved learning. And when a woman came and promised to take him to his extended family to buy essential school supplies, he went with her. That promise was a lie. and instead he was sold to a fisherman on Lake Volta in Ghana. So this is the largest man-made lake in the world. It's about 150 times the size of Loch Lomond, for context. And where thousands of children are trafficked into this lake, into the fishing industry. And Godwin was held on a small island in a remote part in the north of the lake. And he was forced to rise at dawn to fish for long hours in scorching heat, risking his life, diving deep into the lake. As you can see, there are lots of, because this was previously a forest, lots of rubble and trees sticking out of the water. So as the nets were cast into the water, they would get tangled in the rubble. So young boys would be trafficked to dive deep into the water to untangle the nets because they had small hands and less fear, but most of whom had never learned to swim. So this was incredibly dangerous work. No school, no family, just work. And today, an estimated 50 million people are living in slavery. And one in four of these is a child. And this is not a crime that remains on the other side of the world. It lingers in the food that we eat, in the clothes that we wear, on the internet that we scroll. It's close. And I know, we know that one day this will not be the case. There will be perfect justice carried out by a perfectly holy and just God. But looking at these passages, I simply just don't believe that today, as Christians, turning our heads and singing louder can be an option. Justice is not an optional extra for our justice committees, our mission-loving friends. It's at the very heart of God. And this mandate is not new. It's not something that's just simply on trend in today's society that millennials are getting excited about, although I am the epitome of that person. No, the call to justice is integral to the entirety of Scripture. And if justice is so integral to the character of God, we as the church get this unique privilege in leading the way, but we can also miss it. Micah shows us that even our best offerings, our finest worship, will not be delighted in if there is no justice. And justice means to make right. It's a relational word, to make right our relationship with God, with each other, and with the world. And in the Old Testament, it is the second most talked about theme after idolatry. And then we get to the New Testament, and one in every 16 verses speaks about justice. In Matthew and Mark, it's one in every 10. And then in Luke, it's one in every 7 verses. And in Luke, we come to this amazing moment where Jesus announces the publicly the reason for his ministry. So this is literally him grabbing the microphone and saying, "This is who I am and this is what I am about." And he says this, he says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives, recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." The whole of the Old Testament leading to the coming of Jesus, and then throughout his life, we then see Jesus drawing close to those who are marginalized in society, the most vulnerable. Today, poverty leaves billions of people unprotected by the law. And what this means is in areas where there are gaps in a justice system, whilst the wealthy can pay for private protection, it's the most vulnerable that are left vulnerable to exploitation. And this brings us back to Godwin. Godwin suffered on this island for 3 years until Ghanaian police and IJM found him and they brought him to safety. But Godwin wasn't ready to go home at this point. He is an incredibly brave man. And what he did next was absolutely remarkable. He bravely chose to go back to the island where he was subjected to so much abuse. And over several weeks, his courage going back and highlighting other children who were being held in exploitation meant that 29 other young boys were freed, one of whom was his brother. And today, Godwin is a leader among his peers. He's picked up his school books again. He's loved by his headmaster. He's determined to become a doctor, and I have no doubt he will. He's an incredibly courageous man. And this is what's possible. This freedom, this justice, this restoration is possible. We're seeing the tides of justice, injustice turn, as we saw in that video. And to date, more than 76,000 people like Godwin have been rescued into freedom and out of oppression into what God has for them. Jesus' arrival ushers in this ministry that focuses on the most vulnerable in our societies. So we can know that God will have his justice, that his story of freedom will continue to be written. And the baffling part of it all is that he chooses to use us, imperfect people, who no matter how far we wander away from his calls to justice, he continues to call back, joining him in making what was wrong right. And if we look at the life of Jesus, I'm afraid this is probably going to look quite messy. Loving mercy, which is something Adam's going to speak about, will probably involve getting up close and personal with suffering, letting it break our hearts, sacrificially and persistently loving people. I mentioned earlier that I grew up on a farm in the Isle of Man, living alongside lots of different people. And I think sometimes you can romanticize what that looks like in a short, quick testimony, can't you? Of the before and then after, now everything's fine. But you can skip over that bit in between that looks like a lot of a slog and a lot of persistently loving people and a lot of two steps forward, one step back. Maybe you felt that in different ways in the room here today. Loving people is really hard, but it's so good and it's so worth it. So I'm going to invite Adam up to speak into that a little bit more.
Yeah, and just as Zoe said there, loving people can sometimes come at a huge cost of getting involved and getting up close and personal with suffering. And I'm sure that for anyone in the room here who has, you know the reality of it. And I just want to share a quote with you from Gary Haugen, who's the CEO and founder of IGM. And he says, "The victims of injustice in our world do not need our spasms of passion. They need our long obedience in the same direction, our legs and lungs of endurance, and we need sturdy stores of joy." And I think that sometimes when we think of and reflect on the world that we're in, which has so much need, when we think of that joy, it can sometimes be a bit difficult. And I know that I can do mercy, but loving mercy is a little bit more difficult. It demands more of myself, more of ourselves. It means that rather than the occasional one-offs, it's more long-term. And Jesus is calling us to love people and love as he did, his way. And to love is to be compassionate, and it's to enter into people's suffering. And now, I know I'm pretty biased here, but I will say that I have the most incredible colleagues here at IGM, Zoe included. And our teams are on the front line in 20 different countries across the world, taking on cases of violent oppression. And so our teams are out there, lawyers, undercover investigators, social workers, as I'd mentioned before, fighting because justice urgently needs to be fought for. There's boys trapped on lakes. There's entire families trapped in brick kilns. There are children exploited in brothels. And every day that they're not found is a day where they are abused. And so no matter the darkness, our team, they keep going. They keep fighting, they keep loving, and seeing God's breakthrough and seeing Godwin that we saw at school makes it so much more worth it. And so today, I wonder what God may be speaking to you about. You know, there's so many different things. Maybe as you were listening to Zoe speak there, it may be that it's the particular issue of slavery. It may be that there's someone that you know who is battling with loneliness, or that it's poverty, addiction. It may be the persecuted church that you feel particularly called to, adoption, racial injustice, or the refugee crisis. And so what is it for you where God is inviting you to persist in loving mercy? And I know that in your head you're thinking of that, and you may be thinking already of a 10-point plan to save the world, but let's maybe pause on that for a second. And we need to stop there, pause, and look at how, because really we're all familiar with how it ends. You know, we were talking there before as well about when you hear about all these things, there's a massive weight and a weariness, and you feel all that pressure to do everything by yourself all at once. And you know, justice starts and ends with Jesus and the light of the world, where no darkness can stand against. And so how on earth are we supposed to act justly, love mercy, without his power and presence? And so really the way that we do that is to walk humbly with Jesus. And so in walking humbly with Jesus, that is justice with Jesus. And as we were saying at IGM, we fully believe that the justice starts at the feet of Jesus. And as a team, our working day, we spend an hour in prayer. And in the afternoon, as a team, we come together, and that's praying into rescue operations, raids for protection of our private investigators, for divine favor and wisdom as we partner with organizations, partner with government, healing of our clients, for God's presence to be in all areas of our work. And then we give it all to the God of justice. And I know that it might seem a bit wild, like when you're thinking business-minded, and if you're efficient-minded as well, you're thinking, what does that look like and why? And that's, you know, that's approximately 1,500 staff globally praying. That's 7,500 hours of prayer a week. And that's nearly 400,000 paid hours of prayer where we could be on the front line rescuing children like Godwin. But the thing is, at my kind of short but not really now time at IGM, I've just realized the priceless power of prayer, and that if we have any chance of seeing slavery and the different injustices in the world ended, then the only way we can do that is through the power of God, and that God has to be taking steps ahead of us for that to be even possible. And so I'd love to invite you today to join in the prayer of movement. There's a QR code just behind me. And we see God moving miraculously in prayer. And so you can scan that. There are also forms at the end of the rows, but we'll also be outside at a stall there as well if you'd like to chat with us about partnering with us in prayer and just the urgent updates which we need the power of prayer for. Or maybe you may feel God stirring you in a different way to invest in the movement of justice. And this morning, if it would bring you joy, I'd love to invite you to join us as a prayer partner, which is giving monthly to sustain these different breakthroughs that we see. And again, there's a QR code just behind me. And please do come and chat with us. You'll see the cards on the end of the row as well. Or maybe you've got a completely different way in which you'd like to partner with us. And there's so much different creativity and diversity of thought here in the room. So please do come and chat with me or Zoe at the end, and we'd love to hear what you'd have to say. And in this particular line of work, you know, God really does grant us the privilege of partnering with him. You know, as Zoe said, God, he may not need us, but he wants us. And as messy as it may be, he gives us that privilege. And so as we face injustice, there's the temptation to kind of to go on our own strength, as we were saying. There's everything that we can tackle. But if we do that, it's not sustainable and realistically we'll burn out. Really, we're not enough. Only Jesus is. Jesus is the hope of the world. And to be honest, this is something that I do struggle with. Zoe will have seen that. I struggle with rest and not just going 100 miles an hour, not physically. I'm not great at like a sprint, but where I just go like 100 miles an hour by myself. Like, I'm the oldest in my family. I was brought up by amazingly really strong parents, and so it made me quite strong as well. But really, I can't and I shouldn't do my walk of faith of my own, and certainly not walk of justice on your own as well. And so no matter how much you work out, no matter how big your shoulders are, you're not supposed to do this on your own. You can't carry that weight by yourself. And to attempt that work of justice without God, it robs not only ourselves, but also the people we serve, the power and presence of God. And so the only way that we can do it is then look at the way that Jesus did justice. How did he do it? It wasn't a sprint. It wasn't an 100-meter dash. What he did is in the more and many that he experienced, as the crowds grew many and as the needs grew more, he didn't run around trying to meet every single need, panicked and desperate. No, what we saw is that in the more and in the many, he retreated to his Father. And Luke 15 says, but he would withdraw to desolate places and pray. And so, yes, he did let injustice in close, and he got close up and personal with the marginalized and the oppressed. But he always did it from an overflow with a relationship with the Father. And when we come back to that quote, Gary Harden quote there, where he says, the victims of injustice in our world do not need our spasms of passion. They need our long obedience in the same direction, our legs and lungs of endurance, and we need sturdy stores of joy. And so really, this journey of justice that we're on, it won't happen just because we want to go harder or try harder, go faster, with a movement of people that are just completely burnt out, or people who want to be nice. We need to remember the words of Micah, who gave us a tip there. Act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. And today in Ghana, coming back full circle, the Church of Ghana is a force to be reckoned with, and they're becoming a nation determined to end child trafficking. They declare new songs of freedom. And what we see is followers of Jesus facing that darkness and recognizing their desperate need in this move of God as they fight justice, declaring new songs of freedom. And so for us, today, we want to join in them in refusing to sing louder over those cries for freedom, refusing the temptation to be overwhelmed, but instead rather letting injustice come in close and interceding for freedom in the long work of justice that we have. And so today, I just wanted to leave you with that question that when we were doing the interview that Zoe had said there, what is in your hands? What is it that God has placed on your heart, the gifts that he has given you in this fight of justice? Thank you so much.